Hello, Joe.
Yeah, hey, how you doing, Chris?
Yeah, I'm good. Doing fine.
Well, good to hear. I'm guessing you guys are still picking up that confetti from that big hockey parade, huh?
And there's still not just confetti, but some kegs to empty.
Oh, really?
In addition to the Stanley Cup itself. So, yes.
Little party going on, huh?
Well, we haven't had a winning sports team for 26 years, I think, 25 years since the Redskins won the Super Bowl back in the early 90s, so it's been a while.
Well, it's just then. You guys can party for a little bit, so.
Yes.
Well, Chris, a lot going on in the dairy side of things. Keep hearing about the Dairy Margin Protection Program. We're getting that deadline extended again, huh?
Yeah, they keep extending it. It was supposed to be reached by June 1st, and then the USDA extended it a week to the 8th, and then yesterday afternoon they announced a two-week extension, so now it's June 22nd. So we'll see whether or not that really juices the interest in the program. I think they picked up about 1,000 additional dairy operations by extending it 1 week here until the 8th. I don't know that there's a lot more interest out there, but I guess we're going to find out. I think one thing that will drive the interest, Joe, that USDA is doing is they are now issuing checks to a lot of the farmers that chose the higher coverage levels for 2018. And so once people start getting thousands of dollars in insurance payouts from the Margin Protection Program, that might spur some of their neighbors who didn't sign up to take another look at the program.
So I'm assuming as they extend the deadline, there's been some lukewarm response, right?
Well, I think the response has been pretty good. We now have more than 50% of the farms in the country, roughly 21,000, enrolled, which I think is a decent threshold. Certainly there are some people who got disgusted with the program in the first few years and don't want to take another look at it. But, you know, let's not be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. If you are even producing 5 or 10 million pounds, you can still arrange your production history so that you're guaranteed a payout, a net payout above the insurance premiums you have to pay in. And any extra money these days is, I think, a welcome thing for a lot of people. So we're hoping that maybe this extra 10 days now gives yet some additional people a chance to take a second look at the program.
I know we had a local dairy meeting put on by Minnesota Farmers Union yesterday, and just a common theme when this issue was brought up is we don't want a Band-Aid. And I know this is a Band-Aid for now, but it's a Band-Aid that's going to help out, you know, in the terms of a few extra dollars,
yeah,
as you mentioned. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much guaranteed money, which to me is more than a Band-Aid. But if the wound is really deep, obviously there are not a lot of other alternatives out there. I mean, the federal safety net, not just for dairy, but for a variety of commodities, is little more than a Band-Aid. And, of course, a lot of other livestock commodities, including beef and pork and poultry, have no safety net at all to speak of, maybe the livestock gross margin program. So, you know, you got to be careful to not look at half a loaf and think that there's nothing there at all.
Yeah, you see that May margin at $6.97, June at $7.37. So 1, 2, 3, 4 months under that $7 mark there, that's going to
add
up. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's 4 consecutive months of at least a dollar, a hundredweight payment if you choose the $8 coverage level. So that's nothing to sneeze at.
Mm-hmm. Chris Galen, National Milk, joining us. So one other topic that was brought up yesterday as many are trying to compare our U.S. dairy with Canada and some sort of maybe not a quota system. I know you've shared and expressed your feelings on that in the past, but they're saying we need to do some sort of management of our supply, and that seemed to be a theme out of our meeting we had yesterday.
Yeah, you know, we tried very hard to do that 4 years ago with the last farm bill. There was a lot of opposition throughout the food industry. There was a lot of support from many dairy farmers, but you have other farmers who don't want it. And ultimately, if you've got some vocal critics within the dairy farmer community, plus processors, plus retailers, and others who are opposed to it, it gets very hard to build the political will to get something done. And that's why when this was voted on, we had the opportunity to do something to help send signals for farmers to reduce their production, whether you call that supply management, we call that market stabilization. But the Congress rejected it, and basically, for the most part, those are the same people who are still in office 4 years later. So, you know, the reality is that trying a similar thing 4 years later would not result in any different outcome. That's why, you know, the House Farm Bill, which very nearly passed and likely will here in the next couple weeks, and then the Senate Farm Bill, which just passed here in the last hour, Joe, neither one of them are going to do anything along those lines. So that's just the reality of the situation, not just here in Washington, but within the dairy industry more broadly.
When it comes to the Farm Bill, we mentioned the Senate one that just passed this morning. Is that $9 coverage in that or no, Chris?
There is the range is up to $9 per hundredweight. And then the other thing that it does, is it gives farms the opportunity to insure less than a minimum 25% of their milk production history. And that will help larger operations that otherwise couldn't make the MPP coverage threshold work for them. So it's likely that when the Farm Bill is voted on by the full Senate, either that or when the House and the Senate sit down to negotiate their differences on a variety of issues, that the program and the safety net for dairy is going to evolve again. So we haven't gotten too far along the lines of explaining what the specifics are, Joe, because a lot of these things have to do with little adjustments to coverage levels, margin levels, things like that, and that's in all likelihood going to change again. We're just hoping that when the dust settles, that we get a new Farm Bill here in 2018. The big difference between the House Farm Bill and the Senate one has nothing to do with farm policy. It has to do with eligibility requirements for people getting food stamps. And the House has done some things that make it much more restrictive. None of the Democrats supported that. Republicans in the Senate took a different approach. So somehow they're going to have to bridge a pretty significant difference between the House and the Senate. We'll see where that nets out.
Chris, just one more theme from the meeting yesterday was this whole notion of small farms against big farms, and we need a two-tier system, and it's unfair how things roll. It seems like that's always the elephant in the room, that the guy milking 40 to 80 cows is saying the guy milking 2,000 cows or the gal milking 2,000 cows, they're on the bad side, or the side that's causing the issue. It seems like that conversation we hear a lot around this area.
Well, it's unfortunate because from where we sit, we need farms of all sizes, and it's difficult, of course, to come up with a one-size-fits-all farm policy. Certainly, the way the margin protection program works this year, it's much more cost-effective for farms producing 5 million pounds of milk per year or less, which is the great majority of farms in this country, but you do have farmers larger than that in Minnesota, in Wisconsin, elsewhere in the Midwest, as well as across the country. So we don't think that farm policy necessarily should pick winners and losers. A lot of people think that by not doing that, then you're generating losers anyway. The point is to be able to provide some safety net, but not necessarily have a system that doesn't that is completely removed from supply and demand and just what happens in a free market system.
Now, Chris, finally, you had a couple of meetings last week. Is that right?
We had our board meeting last week, and importantly, the other thing that we did to help farmers economically is renewed the Cooperatives Working Together program for three more years. It now runs through December of 2021, so 3.5 years from now. And this is important because unlike farm programs administered by the government, which can change, as we've just been talking about, you don't know what Congress is going to do with government safety nets. But CWT is a farmer-led, farmer-funded effort. It allows us to make our dairy exports more competitive. If you look at the numbers, our exports are really ramping up this year, and some of that is attributable to CWT. Certainly not all of it, but I think so far this year we've exported the milk equivalent of something like 600 or 700 million pounds of milk. So as we see more growth from all around the country, we need to have a tool like CWT that's going to keep our exports competitive in overseas markets.
Chris, finally, hearing anything regarding dairy and NAFTA at all lately?
Only if you listen to what the president is tweeting. Certainly he caused quite a dust up here over the weekend after the G7 meeting, and a lot of it was centered on the spat between Trump and Trudeau over Canada dairy tariffs. This is all part of the negotiation process. When you strip out the rhetoric, the reality is that Canada is very protectionist when it comes to allowing imports from the U.S. and other countries. And so we just need to keep reminding people of that. The president did so very emphatically here a few days ago. But it would be incorrect, Joe, to paint this as just a spat between the U.S. and Canada or between Presidents Trump and Prime Minister Trudeau. A lot of other countries, New Zealand, Australia, Mexico, European countries, don't like what Canada is doing on its dairy policy, don't like its Class 7 program. So this is not just about the U.S. picking a fight with Canada. It's actually Canada picking a fight with a lot of other dairy countries around the world.
So a lot to be done there, Chris.
Still some work to be done, and I don't think the NAFTA deal is going to get settled anytime soon.
So we should send some donuts or flowers to Canada and say we're sorry, or...
Well, I don't know if that would be our best negotiating tactic. I know that Peter Navarro, who's an important trade negotiator, did apologize for some of his rhetoric over the weekend, so I guess that's in lieu of flowers and donuts, but hopefully that will help be a Band-Aid for some of the hurt feelings in Canada.
But on the other side, it's hard to negotiate, as you know, you look at the definition of a negotiation where they just put their heels in the mud and say, you know what, Chris, we're not backing down. That's where we are, and you got to take it, you know.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And yet the president showed when he went to Singapore this weekend that if you can negotiate with Kim Jong-un, perhaps there's an opportunity to even negotiate with Canada. It just depends on the day and the issue, but we're hopeful still that we'll have cooler heads prevail and that we're going to make some progress on our dairy trade issues with Canada.
All right, Chris, we always appreciate your time. We'll talk to you in a few weeks, okay?
Sure thing, Joe.
All right, Chris Gale and National Milk Producers Federation joining us here on CHASM Radio.